In 1999, then-reporter Julie Buckles and her new husband, Charlie Ray, built an E.M. White wood and canvas guide canoe and set off on a 1,700-mile canoe honeymoon, traveling from Lake Superior to Wollaston Lake in Canada, where they stayed for the winter. Her book, Paddling to Winter, tells about their adventure. And Julie just finished her talk here at North House, so we want to get a sampling from the story she told here. Julie Buckles, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. I mean, you've got a great story to tell, and I'm sure the North House folks found you out or sought you out and convinced you to come up here to share it with the folks here. It's too late for our listeners now to hear your presentation, but let's talk a little bit about what you talked about. And let me start with a question is, how did it happen that you and Charlie decided to build a canoe and head off on this adventure on your honeymoon?
Well, it really was the canoe that got us into this event. So, and it's so fun to be around such believers in the wood canvas canoe. Jeannie Berkwin spoke before me and talked a little bit about how people are always amazed that you'd actually paddle these canoes. They should just be up on the wall. And we run into that all the time. And really? I take great pride in trying to get the canoe out at least once a year, if not more. And we just took it up to the Churchill River this last summer. So it's been on the trail with us for a good 15 years, and it still looks beautiful. She's out back. So here we are because of that.
Well, and tell me a little bit more about this E.M. White canoe. I mean, what is it?
It's a traditional old wooden canvas canoe. Okay. We went out and built it with master canoe builder Jerry Stelmach in Maine in January in his shop. And, you know, it's a beautiful, it's a traditional old beautiful boat that just paddles very nicely.
And you paddled it on the Great Lake. I mean, you paddled on Lake Superior. So what's the size of the canoe?
The length and the 18 beam? And a half feet, 80 mm-hmm. pounds when it's dry. Mm-hmm. And which is, you know, that's why many people move to Kevlar as they age. It's a little heavy.
Yeah, well, when is a canoe dry?
Yeah. For those few moments you need to get to the dock.
Okay. So this traditional canoe was one you wanted in lieu of a Kevlar or...
Yep. And, you know, and this was just one piece. We decided to get married and do this trip all at the same moment. And I said, let's get married and do that big trip you've always talked about. This was Charlie's dream initially. And he said, okay. And we put the pieces together. We spent 18 months planning and preparing and prepping for all the logistical problems, all the food. And we are really into food, local foods. And so even back then, 15 years ago, we were doing our own maple syrup. We were harvesting wild rice. So this really kind of just fit into our aesthetic. I knew if I was going to be looking down at my feet at something for months on end, I wanted it to be really pretty. We live in a cabin that's built of wood, and so wood just is warm. It just it's beautiful, and why wouldn't you want to take that? The other very practical reason that you might take a wooden canvas canoe is, as we just learned from Jeannie Berkwin, you can fix it on the trail. Kevlar, you wrap it around, you're done, and the trip's done. But wooden canvas, in 2 hours, they had this story she just told in there, they had fixed their canoe. So you can do that on the trail.
Really? Yeah, I think that's probably true of the Birch Bark canoe, too. We'll hear from Dan Blessing about that. I know he fixed his Birch Bark canoe. There saw pictures of him making repairs. So that's something that people don't always think about, that
right.
The practicality of being able to do that. Did you have to make repairs on your canoe at all?
You know, just a little duct tape, and mm-hmm. ours was ready to go. We there was a few ribs that cracked just a little bit, but the canvas held them. And we did a little bit of maintenance that winter because we wintered over at Wollaston Lake with just a little bit of that coating that goes on the bottom. And otherwise, it was good to go. We never wrapped it around rapids or around rock.
And what? Describe the route for us.
It's the old Voyageur Highway, and so we started, well, this the kind of the philosophy or concept behind the trip was that we wanted to leave from our own backyard.
And you're a Wisconsin girl.
I'm a Wisconsin girl. southern Wisconsin, but we live out in northern Wisconsin now, which is a different kind of place, but it's still Wisconsin, I guess. But we live 1 mile from Lake Superior. And so the idea was that to do a trip where you didn't have to drive for 4 hours or 4 days or anything like that, you could just go out basically your backyard and take off on this adventure. And so we left from the Sioux River Beach between Bayfield and Washburn, mm-hmm. Which is where we still live and the beach we still hang out at. And a bunch of our friends came along with us and paddled the first day up to Bayfield, where we went out to eat at Maggie's restaurant, great little restaurant in Bayfield. And then from there on, we went through Duluth and followed Lake Superior around. We got windbound at Two Harbors, and we had to leave Lake Superior a little earlier than we had anticipated because of the permit system and the Boundary Waters. So we had friends who drove us up and over and did a nice little truck portage into the Boundary Waters, where we floated along, and then it was on to Voyageurs National Park and Rainy Lake and up Lake Winnipeg, 3 weeks on that one very large lake that switches gears every couple hours, and we sat a lot of hours windbound for moments on the shore and would wait and go and wait and go. Kind of a unique lake. It was actually too warm for commercial fishermen during the time we were there, so we spent a long, lonely 3 weeks seeing, I think we saw two people that entire 3 weeks. No recreationalists, no boaters, no...
There's got to be some windy, some tough conditions up there, too, on that lake.
It has been a lake that if you read old accounts from Eric Severide, Eric Moores, that's the lake that kicked a lot of butts. Mm-hmm. And so we were... And we did fine on it, but it was nice to get off onto some smaller lakes.
Did you use a cover on your canoe?
We did. We had a canvas, cover.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned getting some damage to the ribs. I assume that came in the rivers that you went down after you left?
Yeah, I think getting a nick here and there as we bumped on some of the rocks. And really, most of the rapids that we did were in the Boundary Waters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We were on big lakes we went down the Frost River system, and you're going to really tax my memory on this.
That's all right.
Thank you.
The Boundary Waters.
The Boundary Waters.
We know where that is.
Yeah.
And then how did you get to Wollaston Lake?
Well, so then we continued on up and eventually hit from Lake Winnipeg, we hit the Cedar Lake, which then turned into the Saskatchewan River, which then took us to the Sturgeon Weir, which is Sigurd Olsen country. And that was actually the only other place we saw a canoeist, and that was someone from Minnesota, of course. who recognized our, because the Duluth News Tribune had done a story about us. We're paddling by, and he said, "Are you those canoeists?" Because I had my wintergreen jacket on.
Well, you're the only canoeist that went by.
I know. And with wintergreen jackets, it was kind of obvious. So, and then onto the Churchill River and Reindeer Lake, and then up and over a very long portage called the Muskeg Portage, which was over a mile of Muskeg. Muskeg, that was physically probably the toughest portion of the trip. And then there we were on Wollaston Lake.
That was one of my questions, was what was that the most challenging part of the trip, or were there more difficulties with waves and big water?
Well, we almost wiped out and ended our trip fourth day on Lake Superior.
Oh, yeah.
Lake Superior mentally was, and I just heard your previous guest say the same thing, it is an intimidating lake, and for a good reason. And it was cold. We left May 1st, 1999, and so it was just above, just 33 degrees probably. And you hit a wave, and all of a sudden your mind starts working really fast, like this may be the end of our trip. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we were coming around Bark Point and got caught in some waves, and we're very lucky to get around.
Yeah, that's true of a lot of folks who've been out on the big lake. Being lucky is not the best way to do it, but what would you say is the most surprising takeaway you had, or the most interesting takeaway you had from this trip?
Well, I think, the feedback I've gotten from the book is, people have commented on all the love there is in this book, and not just between Charlie and myself, but I really wanted to kind of buck that notion that two people head out and they fight the wilderness and they do it alone. We were very attached to our families, and they supported us in many ways on this, and our friends who paddled off with us. So there's a lot of love in the book, but also the characters that we met along the way, who I appreciated just greatly, and just this incredible generosity and compassion from people that we met along the Voyager Highway. And everywhere we went, every single person invited us in for coffee or tea and sat at the kitchen table and made up some bannock. And we sat and told stories and told stories and told stories. And that's something that's nearly gone. And it's something that I will definitely treasure.
Yeah, you don't get that if you're on a driving trip somewhere.
You know. No, and I don't think we get it very much at all anymore. I mean, everyone's looking down at their phones. I just went out to New York City, and I was really disappointed at the lack of eye contact with among people and the lack of conversation. We are all very much working in an individual sphere with our phones and our iPads and our laptops, and I think you barely get that. You know, yeah. It used to be like if people could turn off the TV, it'd be great. But, you know, I think we've gone to another realm.
And you probably wouldn't have that strong an insight if you hadn't taken a trip like this.
No, I don't think I would. It was a complete disconnect as I flew back into O'Hare, and this was 2000, and that was the switchover. Suddenly, everyone had their laptops and they had their handheld phones, and it was a different world.
Would you recommend to people planning their weddings now that they undertake such a...
I think before they plan their weddings, they need to get out in a canoe. We learned a lot about conflict resolution in a canoe, because you can't go anywhere, you can't call your friends, you can't stomp away. You really have to resolve what's going on in the moment. And it was a great life lesson, and it laid a great foundation for us for the rest of our marriage.
And you're still married?
And we're still married.
We got two children now.
Two cute kids who like to go canoeing with us still. And you
mentioned going to Churchill River. Did the kids go?
They did.
With you?
Yeah, we did basically a two-week trip up in the Churchill River, which was fantastic.
Yeah, and with the same canoe?
With the same canoe, yeah.
That's great. You wrote this book, Paddling to Winter. Where can folks find that book right now?
Hopefully almost anywhere. Okay. It's in most bookstores, and it's online through... You know, that one big thing.
We don't want to talk about that.
And here at the Folk School, I think they'll have it in their gift shop. But I think most of the bookstores around here and in Duluth have a copy.
You have a copy right in front of you now. And I want to ask you if you would pick a selection to read from the book. Is that something you could do?
I haven't
given you much of a warning on that, but...
Well, and I'll read a different section than what I read today for the slideshow.
Okay, great.
This one's just a little bit more about the rhythm. This is taken from the Boundary Waters. It took us a while to, you know, kind of just find that groove. We followed the Frost River until it cascaded through a shallow gorge into Little Saginaw Lake. I carried the first load over a mellow 40-rod portage to an island-studded lake with large bays and breathtaking shoreline. It's beautiful, I informed Charlie as I passed him on the trail. Charlie trolled for fish on our way to find a campsite in the early evening light, landing the canoe near a grove of cedars. In a grand gesture of love and goodwill, my new husband offered to haul all the packs up the hill. We camped on a smooth granite knob that pointed into the setting sun and watched the sky turn gold, then pink, then vibrant purple. I thought about the light. I'd never given much thought to sunsets. They come and they go. But now we needed the light. I became increasingly appreciative. Every ray counted for making more miles, cooking dinner, getting chores done, and writing or sketching. There was not enough light for what we wanted to do each day. That night, outside began to seep inward. I loved knowing the cycles of the moon, listening for the wildlife sounds, and watching for the constellations in the sky.
Well, that's beautiful. That illustrates very clearly your connection to the natural world, which we miss when we have our phones in front of our faces.
We do.
We've been talking, for those of you who just tuned in, we've been talking to Julie Buckles here on the Roadhouse at the North House Folk School, where Julie made a presentation this afternoon called Travels in Our Red Handmade... I didn't cover the fact that it was red. Red Handmade Honeymoon Canoe. And she's written a book that she just read from called Paddling to Winter. Julie, is there anything else you'd like to add to what our listeners might need to know about your trip or the book or life in general?
Well, you asked before what was the toughest part, and I think a piece of this trip, we spent a lot of time talking about the canoe travel, was that we stayed still for 8 months in winter in Wollaston Lake, which is a very unique community and place in the world, and I feel... And that was an amazing adventure in itself. That was a very inward adventure. And for an extrovert like myself, I struggled with that part probably the most. Rather than the physical parts. But most of all, I just would love for other people to find their own trips and find their own journeys and their own love and go on their way.
Make lasting memories and lasting lessons. And when you stayed up at Wollaston Lake, was that in a First Nation community or a Native community?
Yep, it was. It's the Dene. Mm-hmm. And they, we've been told, each family eats about 80 caribou a year. So it's a caribou hunting culture. It's a community that definitely is struggling right now, and we were there probably at least while it was still a little bit more intact than it is now. But we've not heard very good stories from since we left.
Yeah. Well, I don't like to end on an unhappy note, but Julie, thank you very much for joining us. I think we probably have to switch over now. It's coming up onto the top of the hour. Appreciate very much having you here. I hope you enjoy the rest of the boat show and the Summer Solstice Festival.
Well, thank you.